So, Berto, some questions that I have for you. Let's get into it. What do you say?
Let's do it.
This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I'm a therapist and a professor.
My name is Humberto Castañeda. I am sort of a carpenter, but it's really hard for me.
So, one of our recent episodes, we had a fight and then we cried.
Yes.
And then afterwards, we stopped recording and you're walking out the door and I'm walking you out and we're standing there on my walkway outside and you're just like, oh my God, dude, I think I had a legit breakthrough today. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, because, you know, there's one self-awareness, of course, is great and there's always advances, but sometimes there's leaps.
Yeah. Right?
And the way you were talking, I was like, huh. But then I'm thinking, well, maybe he's just kind of riding high off the recent.
Right.
Well, then the next day, you say, oh my God, I'm still having breakthroughs. I talked with my brother.
Yeah.
And what happened?
Right. Because during our second conversation, we got to this point where I was like, okay, hold on. I think we both did this where we're like, wait, is there something we're missing here? And on my side, I was like, all right, maybe there is something to this where I double down on arguments. What's the deal? And that's where I pulling that thread, I was like, well, why is that? And then we had our breakthrough moment and I was like, well, I'm hurt. I feel this way and all this stuff. So what I took from that, I was like, well, I wonder if I look back and I think about, you know, arguments that I have or have had or continue to have over the years.
Well,
people
either on mic or not, I mentioned your brother.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I've heard things from him.
Right. Right.
And maybe you, but mainly from him. That made me think that
right.
There was a conversation there potentially.
Right. And then I thought of other people too. And so I was like, okay, oh yeah. So maybe this is like, this was a blind spot. And the gist of what I think I had realized, which I've been solidifying more and more, is that obviously, as we all do, I have some hurts in my psyche from childhood trauma and all these things. And the way they come out, it's not the only way, of course, but one of the way it comes out is sometimes when I am in a situation where I sort of like get into a stressful dialogue or stressful debate or something with someone that otherwise I really care for. If I'm starting to feel hurt or threatened or vulnerable in some way.
Insulted.
Judged. Then I feel like digging in. And that the way I'm going to, quote, win this situation is by winning this argument.
And right? Maybe protect yourself.
And protect myself. Even if, and actually kind of blind to how the other person or people might be feeling in the moment or what I'm saying. And okay, so that's the general realization. And so I started applying it mentally to my past and different people and things. So one of the aspects was definitely talking to my brother. So I started to go on an apology tour, basically.
Mm.
And it's interesting because depending on the different people I've talked to, it's completely different reactions. So with my brother, I told him, hey, man, I need to talk to you about something. I want to apologize to you. And he was like, huh? Like, yeah. So think back, you know, all these years and stuff. We get into a lot of debates and whatnot. And so he kind of knew where I was going, but not entirely until I started saying, well, I think for me, what happens is that I'm sure you recognize that there's a lot of times that I dig in and then I keep going and then we don't drop it. And then he said, well, I do too, which is true. In our case, it's kind of both of us. But
I think he's a lesser version of that, though.
Yeah, certainly probably in general. But with me, it happens to like bring out the worst, right? So I explained that my hypothesis was that when we were kids, I was older. I'm still older, but the age gap when you're younger is much more pronounced. I'm 4 years older than him, almost. And when I was a kid, he really looked up to me.
Mm-hmm. I think he still does.
And he still does. But, you know, I was his older brother. I was infallible. I was so smart, all these things. And I felt like I needed to live up to that.
Mm.
So whenever we would be playing things, I always thought, well, I got it subconsciously and somewhat consciously. I'm like, I got to set a good example. He looks up to me. I got to be everything he thinks I am and more. But then the negative side of that is that I felt that I always needed to be right around him. And so if we would start getting into an argument or a debate about something, for whatever reason, my brain tricked me into like, well,
to apply, and maybe this isn't it, but if it's in the same ballpark, he or someone else in the moment would hurt your feelings and out of your awareness.
What it likely was is actually the threat, and I explained this to my brother. I said, look, I probably felt my role in the family was really tenuous because I'm here. I live in Colombia. You live here. I come to visit and I feel like, oh, I'm finally part of like my family here.
So I've seen that dynamic too.
Right.
Not explicitly, but, and not in that way, but you and him have a playful way of making fun of each other.
Right.
And I don't know if he does it anymore, and maybe I won't go into specifics, but he will jab at you sometimes as being a foreigner, you know, because he
is from here.
He's from here.
Right.
Same mom, but
right.
He was born and raised in Tacoma.
Right.
And you were, at least most of your childhood was right. In Colombia. And so I could see some dynamic of that.
That's
maybe
possible.
Even early in life of
that's
like,
possible.
You're the interloper, you know, because until yeah. you showed up, he had his parents all to himself.
That's possible. And that, and this fear in my mind that, well, I already lost my mom once. Don't want to lose my family. My mom
don't
and
get
my family.
In my way, little right. brother.
In a way, right. But ultimately, I think what ended up, the net effect was, okay, I need to prove, because my brother believes I'm smarter and I'm perfect, I need to prove that I am. So I cannot let him win any argument ever. Again, none of this consciously, just under the surface. So therefore, we'd get in these arguments, and I would basically, because I was older and I would just manipulate things to basically always be right. Then as we grow up, we continue having debates, but then now he's actually an adult and we can have more level debates. But I occasionally still won't drop it or whatever, and then he won't drop it, and then it gets really heated.
Yeah, well, how do you think he might, in recent years, speculation, right, it's hard to know, might have hurt your feelings at times?
Well, I think what starts to happen on the surface doesn't match what's going on underneath, because often these arguments are really superficial.
Yeah.
It's about a movie or yeah. a game we were playing or yeah. whatever.
It could be about anything.
But I think what it is the hurt is him questioning me at all. Like, what do you mean I'm not your older brother who's right always and perfect? Like, am I no longer valuable to you? So the way I put it to him in our conversation is I explained that I think my fear was that if I didn't win the argument, it made me useless as a member of our little family.
Oh.
Because then my role was no longer useful, right? Because I need to fulfill that role where I'm right. I'm older and right.
Interesting.
And so I think what might end up happening is we'll be having a conversation about whatever. He expresses an opinion. I express an opinion. We start debating. And then subconsciously, I take it as him saying, you know what, older brother, I no longer need you.
Huh.
You're no longer someone I need to look up to.
When do you think that became the association, like when you were younger, that you started subconsciously or consciously to associate that you had to, if you didn't establish that he needed you or that you were superior to him, that you would be thrown away? Was that just implied or did something happen?
No, I don't think something happened. I think it was because I never thought about this ever until now, really. So I think it was simply, it must have been that, but when I look at the behavior, it was always like that. I always had to be right.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think it was literally that I was the one visiting. I loved being here. I didn't want to lose it.
Did your mom do anything that would have made you, did you come to the States from Bogota at 15 because you were doing well in school or you were smart? What was there something
no,
you were useful
no, no.
to the
no,
family?
No, no,
and
no,
so
no, no. And this association is before I even moved here, because even when I was visiting in the summers, I still would think that way. You know, obviously when I was living here, we were around each other all the time. Mm-hmm. So
this is just me randomly poking in different directions. But when you were 10,
yeah,
your younger brother was in the
Six.
Loving arms,
yeah.
the loving arms of your mom.
Right.
All the time, year round. And by 10, you were visiting.
Right.
And had complicated feelings about the whole thing, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Were you angry?
I'm sure I was, but I had no awareness or language to think about it that way.
Yeah.
So there is a possibility
that there was
an aggression there.
Yeah.
It's possible that there was an aggression where me winning or even just actually, because it wasn't just winning arguments. It was also convincing him. What do you call it when you're gaslighting him? I would gaslight him in some cases, probably in a way aggressively, mm-hmm. because maybe subconsciously I was upset. But of course, this is all.
I can't imagine you.
Well, it's all speculation.
But, well, it's a pretty good one because I can't imagine you.
Yeah.
At 10, not being angry.
And yet, at the same time,
that would be enraging.
I love him so much.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, of course. And, yeah. And you got along with your mom and your stepdad. If someone asked you, and you really dug down deep at 10, where you wanted to live, what would you have said?
That's a good question, because at 15, I knew decisively where I wanted to live. But at 10...
Because of the conditions, not only in Bogota...
Yeah, everything violence, had added up.
But
to
also
where,
hasn't... Didn't your dad's situation get
worse?
Yeah,
everything got worse. My grandpa was declining. The house was literally falling apart. But at 10... I don't know what the answer... I'm imagining I would have still... Might have said, well, I want to live with my mom. But I don't know. Because I had a full family in Colombia that I loved.
But the fact that you think... I'm ambivalent. At the very least, you would have been on the fence means that, you know, that is a profound loss.
Right.
That you would have felt, particularly in relation to your little brother...
Right.
Who is living the dream.
Right.
And... Yeah, that'll make someone fucking angry.
So that makes sense that there was underlying aggression that I took out in ways that are completely unexpected, which is, I'm older than you, so I'm going to use my age to my advantage to basically always have one up on you,
mm-hmm.
you know?
And you're not a violent person.
Right.
So you're not going to beat the shit out of them.
Right.
And you know you're smart, so...
Why not?
Play to your
why
strengths.
Why not always be right? Yeah. Okay, and then of course, in reality, like this might sound like the listener might be like, "Oh my god!" But we loved each other. We played all the time. We had a wonderful relationship. But we would also argue, and then it got worse as we got old. Like actually, as adults, because as kids, we're talking about like parents just don't understand. Will Smith song would come on. Love the song. Later, I'm saying, "Hey, I'm singing the song," and I say, "I'm singing the line where he says, I want to play in my case." And my brother says to me, what? What did you just say? I said, I want to play in my case. He's like, when does he say that? Well, you know, when he's like, when they're driving him home, he's like, that's not what he says. He says, I want to plead my case. And I said, no, he wants to play in his, like, in his crib. That's what he said. He wants to play in his crib. And he's like, what? He's not a baby. I'm like, well, no, but that's what he's saying. Like, I want to play in my case, like in my crib. You know? And my brother, he's like, right. But I convinced him. He was wrong until the next time we watched the video, and I was still like, I don't hear it. You know, it's that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. But it's also over a trivial matter. It's just, you know. So we had this conversation, and it was actually really touching, and he appreciated it. He also, from his side, he said very nice things like, well, you know, I don't feel like you have to apologize, but I really appreciate it, and all these kinds of things. And it was a great moment. You know, I really think that's true.
That he doesn't feel. I feel like if I were him, I would want you to apologize.
But understand that you don't just like snap into awareness in a moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And when your brother that you love is telling you something vulnerably,
you know
what I mean?
I've literally done the same thing and apologized to my younger brother about different sort of assholery that I inflicted on him when I was 13. My little brother said the same. You don't have to apologize. Yeah. It's fine. He's like, I don't even really remember it, you know. But yeah, I wonder if it's just this general like, well, I don't, you know, because.
Well, just because you're having a gestalt doesn't mean the other person immediately has it.
Right. And I also just think there's a general bias or policy or way that people, in appreciation of your apology, they will say,
let you off easy.
You don't need to apologize. Yeah, yeah. But I think a more helpful way, like for me, I've had a number of interactions with my brother over the years, because every once in a while it'll sort of pop into my head and I'll be reminded. Him and I played a lot. He was seven years younger than me, so he always wanted to play with me and my friends, and I did involve him a lot, but I was also 13 and insecure and would take things out on him sometimes, but we were also very close, so overall I think things were great. And, you know, we're friends now and good relationship now. And I've always been a good relationship. But every once in a while, I just have this pain in my heart. I'll just be like, I'll just text them, be like, oh, I'm so sorry. I was so snarky and I would snap at you sometimes because some of it's on video camera.
Right.
And I'm like, there it is.
There's
me being a dick to it. You know, like we'll be making a funny movie because my dad got a video camera in 82. And so we started making, so I guess I would have been 11 and he would have been like five or something. And I'm wanting him to do this thing on camera to play a character or something.
Right.
And he'll forget the line or something. And I'll go, Kevin. And I just have, and it's just the attitude. And Kevin, he's trying. Oh, I just want to reach through time and strangle me and say, you fucking little shit. Your little brother is trying. People make mistakes. Like, don't be such a fucking bully, goddamn dick. You know what I mean? And it's just so awful.
Yeah.
And so my little brother, I mean, he'll say thanks, but he won't say like, yeah, you probably should apologize. He lets me off the hook.
Well, actually, it makes sense because we've told you this story, I'm sure. There are these stories my brother and I tell, and we tell them as a funny, funny memory. Mm-hmm. But they're stories of kind of me torturing him a bit.
Yeah, I mean,
that sounds horrible. Well, it's basically...
It could be, you know, on the scale of... childhood difficulties, it's like a 3. It's not like you beat him, but you know, 3s can be pretty bad.
And basically it was me generally gaslighting him.
Yeah.
Like
making him feel stupid is the thing. It's not just winning an argument.
Right.
It's making him feel stupid, and that is as a human being.
And like him and I, like we have this narrative, like we laugh about it. We're like, oh my gosh, can you believe blah, blah. Now, what's interesting, like one of them in particular is interesting. Because we've been talking about how, like, what triggers these things. And that was a bit of hurt because I was visiting. I'm in his room.
As a teen.
Yeah, I was 13 or something. And we're sharing a room. So and it's time to go to bed. I think I'm reading something. He's reading or something. Or I think we're just trying to go to bed. And I'm a little congested. I'm legitimately a little congested. So I think he says, like, stop breathing. Or, you know, it's like, stop breathing so loud. And it angers me. And it hurts me because I'm like...
Well, it's directly related to what I was saying earlier of just like your presence is annoying.
Is annoying.
And you already feel like you're an interloper.
Well, am I interfering with... Right?
You're trying to stay out of the way.
Of course, on the surface, I'm not aware of any of that.
Totally.
So the way it comes out is, oh, really? So then what I start doing is I actually start going... like really loud. And he starts getting more and more annoyed. And then he starts crying and he calls, Mom!
Right. So if I understand the situation right, just to put a fine point on this for your awareness.
Right.
And I'm saying this selfishly because I want you to stop doing this to me. On the surface, to you, it's like, well, what's the big deal? Like, I'm just breathing loudly. Right. What's the big deal? I'm just digging in on this detail, what I call logic, that I'm entitled to tell my wife what she's wearing looks good or not. What's the big deal? I'm just making an argument. But the message is received that you are, I don't know the word for it, but like it feels like a personal attack. It's weird.
Did you go back and listen to it?
What?
That episode?
You and me?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I edit the shit out of
it. I went back and listened to it. And I ended up kind of getting the opposite feeling, which is the feedback I had given you, which is that upon listening back, I felt attacked.
Yeah.
Because I felt like you were actually like, you would say that?
Right.
You would do, and I was like,
so, that's all true. That's how it started.
Yeah.
But then your attack happens after that. You feel attacked, so you go on the attack.
Right.
And that... example of you're breathing and then he starts crying, okay, because he's young enough that he can't suppress his tears when he's 13 and you're 17 and you're doing this to him about, you know, the Fresh Prince song. He doesn't start crying, but he's hurt.
Yeah.
And so the effect, and it's really weird because, you know, and I didn't really figure it out until the last time we talked about it too, because for me to start crying about it, you know, I'm like, I started, God, this must really, but why, you know, I don't need him to agree with me. Like, that's not what this is about. It's just that the digging in it feels, it's hurtful. It's weird. It's like, it's this, it's stubbornness that is a, it's communicating something of like, I don't care about you, which is dumb because that's not like what's being explicitly talked about.
Right.
But as you're breathing loudly, you know, you could, if, you know, your parents came in the room and said, what are you doing? You'd be like, even if you admitted it, you'd be like, I was just joking because he didn't like the way I was drinking, breathing. So I started breathing loudly. It's just a joke. Like it would feel that way, but it has that message, I think.
But there's a big difference because in that moment, because of the hurt, I consciously became malicious. Now, again, it's kind of a practical joke kind of maliciousness, but still, such that when my mom comes, when he's screaming, Mom, and she comes in the room and asks what's going on, I, shit-eating grin on my face, say, well, not really, but I'm like, I don't know. He says I'm breathing too loud, right? Which is a completely manipulative thing to say because I know exactly what I'm doing.
In the moment, you know you're lying.
I know exactly what I'm doing. That's malicious. Yeah. But I was doing it to get back at him, right?
Yeah.
So that, to me, is a different modality, but still related to this thing we were talking about, me being angry at him without knowing and being angry at my mom, right? It's a different modality because it's not true that when we get into arguments, I'm then trying to be malicious. You know, I am literally...
But it feels malicious.
It might feel malicious, but in my mind, it has zero resemblance to me going, oh, I see how I can play this. It's a, I really believe every word coming out of my mouth. Yeah. It's not, I think he's right about the video, but I can't let him be right. It's actually... I 100 billion% believe every word coming out of my mouth.
Yeah. You know, far be it from me to interpret your emotions. I think it is related in my head. I am tentative about that because I'm not you. And I'll take your word for it that it might not be related. But I think it's a similar vein of things where when you're hurt, when you're threatened, like in that moment with your brother in bed, or when I'm talking with you on the podcast and I'm... in my dickish way, given my traumas, being pointed, argue, attacking you, and wording it in this very, you know, as we talked about last time, there's a million other ways I could have worded it or toned it or something. Because you feel attacked, called out, insulted, assumptions made about you or something, you know, some kind of hurtful, I don't know if it's maliciousness that you're being hurt by, but... maybe maliciousness, like you feel like you're being unfairly characterized or something.
Yeah,
you're being unfairly judged, pigeonholed in a negative way, in an unfair way. You get hurt by that.
Right.
And what you do to protect yourself is to do some version of, you know, you can call it malicious, you could call it protecting the self, you could call it trying to win or... I don't know, establish dominance, whatever you want to say. It's, you know, there are different modes or behavioral sets that are in that category. As an adult, you're not going to try to make someone cry necessarily, but you're going to try to, quote unquote, win the argument. So I think it is, in my book, it could be similar.
Obviously there's similar hurt and reaction that is out of, incommensurate with the surface level of things. It's just that what I'm trying to get at is with my brother, I did more than just argue a point that I believed was right to the point of exhaustion and to the point of hurt. I also did malicious intent, aware of being malicious.
Bullying him with awareness.
Right. Yeah. Now, again, in the scale, it's not like, but it was still.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the part that actually I didn't put together till we're having this conversation today because I had only apologized to him about the debates. As adults mostly. And I mentioned that as a kid I did. But I hadn't thought, oh, actually, but I was mean to you in these other ways.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, in the way that, it's funny that apologizing to our younger brothers would have so many parallels. In the same way that I was a dick to my younger brother when I was 12. Right. Actually, I would have been 11, I guess, went in 82. Why was I being a dick? Well, because I guess I was trying to make good content with these videos at the age of 11.
Right.
And my brother was my main collaborator and wanted to collaborate. And I was the one in power trying to make the content, and he was messing it up in my, you know, in my head, he was messing it up and making it hard for me to make content, because that was the big thing, is eventually we'd show it to everyone,
yeah.
You know, to the family and friends and stuff. And, you know, people got a kick out of it because at the time it was so home video cameras
right.
were brand new. Like we were literally the only people that I knew out of hundreds of kids that even had a video right. camera.
It was not common.
Yeah, it was extremely rare. And just as, I mean, our early video tapings of family and friends, people flipped out when the camera was on them. I mean, the amount of discomfort that people had back then with a camera pointed at them. I mean, it was intense.
I've watched those videos on YouTube where they show like early 90s, whoever had a video camera in the school, probably people like you, in high schools and things. And that's exactly what you see. People yeah. are like, what are you doing? Stop filming me.
Yeah, I mean, or they fly into a manic state of yeah. trying to entertain and stuff. It's pretty wild.
Because, yeah.
you know, the only time you saw cameras was for famous people.
That's
right. That was it. And to have it just in your midst was like walking around with a giant microphone to the world. It felt that way. It
yeah.
wasn't. But anyway, so we'd show it to everyone. And so he was, in my mind, messing up the content. And so I, because of my insecurity, because I feel like I'm not good enough unless my content is good enough and it wasn't going to be perfect, I got angry
right.
at my younger brother, and all my empathy was eclipsed by my insecurities. And so I snapped at him.
Yeah.
And when you were saying things that I thought were not a good message that I want to be associated with.
Right.
And I thought, don't say that. And I became a dick because of my insecurities and attacked you.
Yeah. I mean, these parallels are, this is what happened. By the way, I also tried apologies to two other of my friends. Hmm. And those didn't go the way I thought they would go. Because they were sort of confused. And it makes sense. After we talked about it a little bit, it's that people have different dynamics with different people. So even though they are aware that I can argue a point till I'm blue in the face, the dynamics between us have been such that that hasn't led to the kind of like hurt or problems that I've had with other people.
Well, like if we weren't podcasters and we were just hanging buddies,
right?
I don't think you would care about me enough that you would get as hurt and thus as triggered.
Likely. So on the one hand, I used to have this friend. We were extremely good friends in high school. And then after we went off to college and stuff, he went one way, I went the other. But we would see each other on some occasion, not that frequently. And we would love to see each other. We were great friends. He became a chaplain in the Navy. And years later, we were having dinner. And this is maybe 15 years ago or something. And over dinner, I was complaining about George Bush, the president. And really complaining and like express and making fun of him, all these things. And he was pushing back because he felt like, you know, that was his commander in chief at the time. And he's like, and I did my usual self, which is to use the same kind of model, I felt challenged and hurt that my friend, my childhood friend, the person I really admire and respect, would not share my beliefs about this person I think is so damaging.
Well, and I'm just throwing it out there, would insult you and your intelligence or...
I guess, right. So I start doing the thing and I won't let it go. And the thing where I don't pay attention to him anymore, to notice that he's getting increasingly uncomfortable, increasingly hurt.
Right.
And it gets to the point where he says, I think we should end the dinner. And that's it. And we leave. And that was the end of the friendship.
You didn't talk to him again?
No.
Right.
Now.
So there's a difference between disagreeing.
Right.
And that's my discovery. And that really confirms what I'm saying is that I think in certain dynamics, I don't know if it's the person as much as the dynamic that is built, that there's a difference between, because I've had countless debates with you that don't hurt my feelings.
Right.
Where I adamantly disagree with what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I don't have that heart flutter the way right. that I do under a handful of times when we quote unquote are debating. It's a very different experience. It is the malicious word you used. It fits because it's really a very amorphous feeling where you're just like, and you know, in my shoes, I'm so confused, you know, because I'm like, well, we're just debating, but I'm not aware of what's happening in my body. It's a very hurtful, kind of scary feeling. It's a fight or flight response. So I imagine with that friend that you just mentioned, that for them,
it's the same. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not just that, oh, we disagree on George Bush. It's like, I feel personally attacked, not just by what he's saying, but the attitude he seems to be attacking me.
The only difference I was drawing to the stories with my brother is that at no point during that one at no point in my brain am I actually have ill intent.
No.
Not consciously, anyways. It's that you can ask me now. Of course I believed Bush was an idiot and all. I'd go off on hours for it. So, of course I was arguing legitimately.
Yeah, you weren't lying.
I'm sure that every single word I said that night,
right.
I will stand by.
Yeah.
What I wasn't paying attention was how the other person was feeling.
Well, and the tone you were using.
Well, as a result of me badgering.
That's a key point that I think is key, is that it's not just the way the other person is interpreting it. It's the manner in which you're debating.
Sure. Now, there are two sides to this, because the flip side is that, well, I felt hurt too and disappointed and all these things. So I was like, so now the thing that I could have done in that moment would have been, I guess if I was really self-aware at the time, would have been, oh, this is an impasse. But then I got to make a decision. Do I want this to be the thing that really breaks this friendship? Because it might. Or do I want to be okay with disagreements about politics?
Yeah.
Because honestly, like, it's not the kind of thing where I could have just said, well, maybe you're right. Maybe Bush is okay. Because no. That's not right. So I would have had to basically be aware that, oh, okay, if I keep going like this, this may break.
Yeah.
And do I want that?
Yeah.
And then if I go, no, I don't want that, because I don't know, I didn't ask myself the question at all. If the answer is like, no, I don't want that, then maybe I need to be like, well, you know, it's politics, different people, whatever. You know, like give him an out. Mm-hmm. It will change the relationship a bit, because then now I know, well, that's one topic I can't talk to him about, right?
Well, I don't know if you're getting to this, but in my opinion, the foundation self-awareness is, how did he hurt my feelings that would cause me to get malicious in the first place?
But you say malicious.
Well, and hurtful. Just hurtful.
Yeah, yeah. And I might be doing that subconsciously, but I'm not doing it consciously.
Right.
And I'm not saying that other people wouldn't have been hurt. I'm just saying that I wasn't paying attention either way.
Right. So the baseline awareness is, if I were in your shoes, given my way of thinking, I would say, okay, wait. You know, if I went to the bathroom or something, I'd be like, okay, I'm doing that thing again. Because my dickishness, I've been in therapy about for 30 years and has been a target of mine for a long time. Hence, when you brought it up last time we talked, I don't know why I'm pointing over there. You were sitting over here. Or no, you were over there.
Yeah,
we were filming. Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. You were, because when we do audio only, you sit right next to me. And when we do video, you sit across from me. And hence the fact that when you brought it up, the last time we talked about this, I believe, I instantly was like, yes, I was a dick.
Right, right, right. Okay.
There was no, I didn't have to be led down a road.
Right.
Because I've done a shit ton of work and I don't like this and I cringe every time I think about it, but you know, I'm very aware. In fact, I did it to Stacy last week and she was in a bad mood and I was like, what's going on? And she told me that I was a dick to her earlier, and without any fight or flight, I just said, and she was kind of hinting. And so I was like, oh my God, I was a dick, wasn't I? And I did that and I did that. And she's like, yeah. And I apologized. You know, I'm not, now rewind the clock 10 years or 20 years. There's no fucking way I would have been able to even admit it, even when I was calm. But, you know, so my point is that if I was in your shoes, given what you're saying about this friend, go to the bathroom. Okay, I'm doing that thing again. And I know this about myself. Okay. I don't know consciously, but I must be hurt. There must be something that I'm hurt by.
Right.
And I don't feel it, but I must be coming off with a tone that is dickish, hurtful. What am I hurt by? I don't know. But without that awareness, I wouldn't know how to proceed, and, right. and especially to calm, because, you know, you're saying, well, I would just sort of recognize what's at stake and it's not worth it. And that would certainly might have worked. But an even more helpful thing in my view, say you did that with your friend about George Bush. You're just like, this isn't worth it. I'm going to shut this down and, you know, wrap this up. We'll talk about something else. But you're still hurt.
Yeah, that's the part. You're not wrong. It's just, I don't know what to do about that one, because some people, not you, some people, like there's another person in my family that I'm thinking of right now. It's not my dad, someone else, that I just know I cannot actually reach them with a conversation that's like this. So even if I did the full math about myself, like, wow, I am hurt right now. That's why I'm doing this. I think at that point, the only thing I can think to do is like stop the conversation, but I don't know what to do to get unhurt by what they said or did or whatever, because I don't know a way to explain to them that they would understand or even agree with that wouldn't lead us back down another conversation.
But at the very least, you're standing in the bathroom, your friend at dinner is out, and you're both steaming and both fight or flighting.
Yeah.
Both hurting. And you're like, okay, I must be hurt. Check in with my body. Yeah. He hurt my feelings when with his tone or whatever he said, or I'm just generally hurt that we don't think alike in this way. And there's a lot at stake, you know, and I get, you know, I would imagine that you might even have like roots in Bogota with political strife and like what could happen, you know, like, hey, and so there's some historical thing there, so I don't even have to do what he was saying. But, you know, he kind of did say some of those things, and I'm personally threatened by what he's saying. You know, it could really lead to a lot of horrible things happening to us as a country. And my, you know, my future kids that will, you know, eventually be born one day, and I'm very threatened in this moment. I can take care of myself in this moment. I can, you know, because just recognizing one's hurt dissipates a lot of it, and you don't have to even be able to have the conversation with the person to be able to mitigate a lot of the ill effects. Because if you just clamp down on the symptom, later in the conversation, you might have it sneak out again in some other way.
Yeah.
You know?
Again, I agree with you. And I agree that recognizing that, oh, wait, I'm being hurt. And with some people, like with my brother, with you, I think there is an easy, not easy, but like there's a path, a known path for like, oh, okay, let me tell you something that's going on for me right now, right? Okay.
100%.
Right. When I rewind the clock, now, nowadays, maybe I could do that with that person, but when I rewind the clock, I don't have any idea what I could have done to unwind that clock at the time.
The George Bush guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. In my world, I'd love it if there was a path, but yeah, I mean, there's a chance, at the very least, it wouldn't go over well, and at worst, it might even cause more problems, but... Yeah, which I mean, what, you sit down with the average person, you know, regardless of gender, and you're just like, okay, I'm back from the bathroom. So I checked in with myself, did a little self-therapy, a little self-talk, and I figured out that you hurt my feelings earlier. It's not your fault that you hurt my feelings, but, you know, you did. There's some roots in Bogota. And so when you did that, I went into a fight or flight, and so I started to dig in. I started to go after you, and I'm guessing I was being hurtful to you, and I'm sorry for that. You know, you might
get, maybe that would have worked.
You might get a blank stare. You know, and that's a whole other factor that we can't control. But like I said, at the very least, you would know.
Yeah.
And what's helped me is when I get to know that feeling in my chest, in my stomach, I'll notice it in the moment so that I don't engage in the behavior in the symptom anymore, because I know what it feels like in the very beginning. Not always, of course, but I have a greater likelihood of that.
The other thing that's different is like there's some hurts that I think are easier, less abstract. Let's put it that way. The hurt in that case was very abstract because we're talking about like a politician.
Yeah.
So like there's a lot of layers of abstraction, right? So certainly at the time I couldn't have recognized this, but even now I might be fooled, right? Because it's like, I got to really be like, wait, hold on.
Well, I wonder though, if we had a recording of that conversation, if similar to listening back to it, you would go, that's when he was being a dick.
Yeah, that could be.
But at the time, it just went past you because you didn't know. But like when you listen to the conversation you and I had, I'm guessing you're talking about the very first.
Yeah, the first.
Yeah. You're like, oh, he's being a dick to me. That's why I was hurt.
Well, yeah.
He started it. He was a dick.
Okay. I'm going to use your, because you keep using the word. Fine. You were being a dick. Fine.
Yeah.
But specifically what happened was that the hurt part that is that what I explained to you last time, but I didn't know it at the time, was like, why are you invalidating my growth? Mm-hmm. That was it. Why are you invalidating my growth?
It's hurtful. You're being a dick.
As in, like, if I was more aware and able to recognize that, what I might have done, and maybe what I'll work on doing these searches, is like, let me think about this. Can I tell you something? You know, like, I think I hear where you're coming from, but I feel a little invalidated, and here's why,
yeah.
Right? Like that kind of thing.
You don't even have to say to me.
Right.
You don't even have to say, I hear what you're saying. I can tell you,
right.
I am so good at this because I do this all day long with my clients.
Yeah.
So you don't have to caveat. You don't have to, you could just be like, Kirk, you're being a dick. And I will instantly go, you know, there's this mental calculation I go through of like, I don't feel like I was being a dick, but no one says that to me unless I was an actual fucking dick. And in all reality, I've been a dick 10 times over from the times that the few people actually tell me. So thank God they're finally telling me. It's like telling someone they have a booger hanging out of their face. Thank you for telling me. I'm guessing, depending on the situation, I will instantly say, I'm sorry, and I will reset.
Right. And I think what you're saying about the feeling, because I need a way to recognize on the fly, because it's sometimes things go so fast.
It's in your body, man.
Right? Because like, I was talking about something and you said, but what? And I was like, well, no, of course not. Or I said, like, no, I don't. And then I kept moving on. And it's when you kept pushing. And then I'm like, wait, why is this bumblebee like buzzing in my face? I'm trying to like, I bet you if I pay attention, mm-hmm. I might be able to go, oh.
Pay attention to what?
To my feeling.
Your body.
I might be able to go, oh, fight or flight.
Yeah.
Let's slow it down. Because what, by not slowing it down, because I was still trying, I was on a train, and by not slowing it down, that's where we really started getting out of sync. Because we were having two different debates, actually. But by not slowing it down, I was like not aware that I could have just paused, told you, oh, actually, this, you know, blah.
Yeah. Well, when you enter fight or flight, it's fight or flight, and you were in fight.
Yeah.
Right. And then the fight produces more, I guess, argument, which causes more hurt and fear, which causes more fight or flight. And then, you know, the fight just goes on
right.
and on. So, being able to stop, slow down. There's also cues. There's like shortcuts, heuristics, like red flags, I guess, that you can look for yourself. Like debating, you know, just be like, I'm in a debate. Red flag.
Yeah.
You know, am I hurt? I'm debating, am I hurt? And maybe not, you know,
right.
but that's a red flag. Someone has that face that they make at me when I know from previous experiences that I am now being hurtful with my stubborn debate.
Right.
Red flag. You know, there are certain things, you know, for me, it's probably when I'm raising my voice or something. I don't know. Anyway, well, you know, so with your other two friends, they're just like, yeah, you never really hurt my feelings about that.
No. It was basically that they can remember, like, you know, one of them, I'll just say Ron. He can remember us arguing for like 6 hours about whether or not Luke Skywalker was a good actor or not.
Yeah.
But, and maybe it's because we just, like, I don't know, length of time. So, no, but it's more than that. For whatever reason, in his case, and I really couldn't come, I was trying to come up with examples. Well, remember that time when it didn't manifest the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another friend whom I also had, whereas there was another friend that I did, and he's like, yeah, I know what you're talking about, right?
Oh.
So it varies. Like in one case, friendship ended.
What that other friend's, when they said, I know what you're talking about?
Well, Eric and I have, but in his case, I'm not saying that this is good, but in his case, he's always laughed it off like, that's just Beardo, right? But we've had that situation where I will try to drag a debate to the ground. And so I told him, I'm sorry. Like, and he did know what I was talking about. The other two were like,
but he wasn't also personally hurt by it.
Well, he might, but again, you don't realize things about it. Like, just because I'm telling him I had this realization doesn't mean in the moment he's like, oh, you're right, I was hurt, right? Like, it, if he is, which he probably is, it may come up later. Like, you know, that thing you said to me, actually, blah, you know?
Yeah.
But with these other two friends, whether or not they are or not, like, it just manifested differently. Like, for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I could imagine, like with Ron, that it just doesn't ever go there. Because I, you know, like the way that Ron digs in, it's more playful than the way I do, you know? Like you and Ron love to have those kind of debates and you have fun with it, the two of you. Whereas for me, I'm probably more dickish about those kinds of things.
I guess, yeah, it's probably, because you're right. Everything is a two-way street. When I think of Ron, a lot of times, my impression of when we're having debates about stuff is he will often say something like, well, I just don't see it that way. And it kind of, and imply like, let's be done. And for whatever reason, it sort of like works with me in that case. Like, I'm like, why? Like, his lack of passion.
But for him to be able to do that.
Maybe he didn't feel as
he doesn't have traumas regarding disagreement or something. I don't know.
Maybe.
There's also, like you were alluding to earlier, this all depends on the recipient of your apology.
Yeah.
Having a lot of self-awareness that they even are being hurt and going into fight or flight themselves.
Right.
I'm not saying that Eric and Ron aren't self-aware. They very well might be. And it doesn't, you know, I think it's absolutely possible. I think, you know, particularly with Ron and maybe with Eric, that the way that the two of you sort of debate things,
right,
it just doesn't ever feel that way to them.
And
because like I said, you and I, 99% of the debates you and I have been in,
right,
it doesn't hurt my feelings.
Right. And relationship dynamics are different. Like the relationship I have with my brother, obviously no one else is my brother. No one else has that thing with my mom. Like, so there's some unique things about some situations that you just don't exactly match, you know. Like, but anyway, so it's been very interesting. I'm not done. I'm, you know.
Just a side note on that, and I think you might have even said something about this, the potential uniqueness or particularness of your and my relationship is if we were brothers, I think you have said you see me as an older brother.
I have at times felt benefited from you in the way that I might have from an older brother.
Right. And I did not see you as a younger brother.
Yeah.
But maybe I actually have a participatory vibe in that, not consciously, but, you know. And you know, you could see symptoms of that, you know.
Oh, that maybe you've told your little brother to shut up sometimes.
Well, not, yeah, not right.
Or get the line right.
and that we might trigger each other, not in because of our brothers.
No.
But just because there's an added intensity to that vibe, right? Like,
yeah.
Like
quite possible.
Like if two friends that are equal, like you and Ron, are debating, then everyone understands, look, we're both standing on equal ground. Whereas if there's a one up, one down, then it's like you're saying to your younger brother, actually, that's interesting,
yeah,
that I need to establish that I'm right because I'm the big brother and that's my role.
Mm.
And you are upset at me because I'm constantly lording over you or something, you know?
Yeah, like, that dynamic like, could be there.
Like it triggers some sort of weird... But there are benefits to that too, right? You know, there's like pros to that, but it comes with it, a cost.
Well, it could be, and this could be for my brother too. It could be like, oh, I look up to this guy, you know, Kirk, and oh, why is he telling me I'm not a good person? You know, and so on.
Yeah.
So
like, because if Ron, for example, gave you the vibe that you were criticizable, there could be a vibe of just like, well, I don't look up to Ron. I look laterally to him, and he can have negative opinions about me, and you know.
Yeah, those are interesting, like definitely interesting dynamics that could be at play there.
Whereas for my criticism of you could carry more weight.
That's true.
Because somehow I'm, you know, in your mind a little above you or something.
Yeah, it could be. It's fascinating. I think the point, though, is definitely like the self-awareness is the trick.
Mm-hmm. And the trick to self-awareness is the body. And the trick to being self-aware of your body in the moment is practice. So when you're calm, relatively, you have to literally practice being aware of your heart and your lungs and your gut and your sweat level and your breathing and your stress and your shoulders. And when you're aware of all that, then in the moment, it'll occur to you, it'll alert you. But when
I'm not at homeostasis right now.
Something will happen where some sort of neuronal pathway will trigger, you know, like if in the middle of a debate, someone kicked you in the shin, you would notice, right?
Right.
But are you aware of your shin before someone kicked you in the shin? No. But there's things happening in your torso that are trying to tell you and are actually telling you things subconsciously that you're actually reacting to, but you're not conscious of it. And the more you do, but you have to practice when you're calm. You have to constantly like turn to the torso. And when I do that, I find that throughout the day, I'm having minor levels of freak out that I'm not aware of.
Mm.
There's like all sorts of, you know, feelings that I'm having, low grade versions of that I never knew existed.
In the last episode, we talked about this. And in this episode, I go into anxiety override. Like right now.
What are you feeling right now?
Buzziness, like kind of shakiness.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like okay. It feels very physical for sure.
You don't look it. I just want to point it out. Like you are, and most people are, very good at coming across. Like they are cool as a cucumber.
And so the hard part is that when the first episode, I didn't feel this way right away. There was a precursor to that. Mm-hmm. It's like what I was saying is that's what it is because the speed was so quick. I think the practice is catching it before it's a runaway train.
Yeah. Like I say, not only because once you're at 8, well, when you become real good at it, even if you're an 8, you'll lose your mind, but that little corner of your prefrontal cortex is so practiced. You know, it's routine. It's like, in the military, when the reason why they have you do routines over and over and over again,
right,
and the reason why they make you follow orders over and over and over again is because when bullets are flying over your head and things are happening, you are in such a state of fear and overwhelm that there's only a tiny corner of your prefrontal cortex that you have control over.
Right.
But because you've done it so many fucking times, you actually will be able to see through the noise and take an action. So, you know.
It's like sports, playing music, whatever.
Yeah.
If you're trying to play through a piece of music that you're still kind of learning while people are staring at you, while you're trying to remember the lyrics.
Rehearse, right?
Yeah.
Because your brain just knows and the different iterations of reacting to stimuli that are getting in the way. And yeah, that's one thing I learned. Just about music rehearsal. Like I hated rehearsing. I was in a band in the 90s, you know, with Huber, where we adamantly were so against rehearsing because it was so boring to us.
Oh my gosh.
That we literally would write songs on the stage. I would turn around to Huber and I'd be like, so I wrote a song, I'll play the intro, start jamming. And we would just write a song on stage. And it was super fun for us. Not so great for the audience.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then I was in a, you know, different bands like with you. You were very adamant about rehearsing. And so we would rehearse, you know, one or two times a week for months before we ever performed on stage. And by the time we got on stage, we were, you know,
solid.
We had it solid, but it wasn't as fun. It became kind of like, I don't want to play this song again. You know, my songs are so dumb.
That is the trade-off. That's true.
All right, let's take a break. We get back. Well, actually, that's the end of this episode because so much time has gone by.
We touched on some points.
I thought we'd talk for 5 minutes, but I didn't know it would get there. And dear listener, I hope that this was at least interesting and maybe an opportunity for yourself to check in with your own body and have some inspiration to further that work. I know a lot of you have done a lot of that work. A lot of you are therapists who help people with that work. But you know, even us therapists can benefit from, because there's not enough time spent talking about this or thinking about it. And I think a lot of things have been illuminated through this process, Berto, in the trilogy of fighting that we might call it. That the path to self-awareness has a lot of twists and turns, and there's different levels to it. And when we have a breakthrough, that might be the first step of many, you know?
That's right.
That it's like, oh, I know I'm seeing something new. I wonder what all is involved in this new thing, you know? And it is my model, and I'll just accept it that I might be wrong, and I'm imposing it on you, Berto, that, you know, my model is hurt and fears at the basis of everything.
Yeah.
And the sometimes you have to infer what you're hurt or fearful of.
Yeah.
Might I just be making shit up to fit my model? Could be. But it is the way I think. It does pan out usually. It does make sense to me evolutionary wise. And so I just want to say that. But, you know, for people out there listening, you know, we get in our heads a lot. We can make a lot of excuses. We can be unaware of a lot of things. But the more we're aware of how often we're hurting and how often we're afraid, at the very least to take care of ourselves internally, and at best, you know, being in relationships where you can voice it without attacking someone, you know, just like, hey, what you just did hurt my feelings.
Right.
Maybe it's just, maybe I'm sensitive to that. I don't know. But, you know, it just kind of hurt my feelings. And the ability to say that, to cultivate a relationship, you know, you and I, Berto, are now at the beginning of cultivating a routine. You know, we right. talked explicitly about, and I, you know, tried to instill trust in you, you know, about me to say, like, you don't have to take it easy on me.
Right, right.
And I almost sense, you did this earlier in today's episode, I almost sense like you want to protect me a little bit. Like, you don't want to make me feel bad. Like, yeah. You're just like, no, everything's, and I'm like, you know, I was a dick. And you're just like, oh, we could say that now?
Yeah.
It's okay.
No, it's true.
Yeah.
And I think
because you're
similar,
a nice person, you know?
I think it's similar to my brother saying, like, you don't have to apologize.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice, but ultimately counterproductive.
Yeah. And actually, that counterproductive is true, because if I can recognize I'm being hurt, then that will prevent me hurting the other person.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing, right?
Yeah.
Because if I'm, like, hurt and then I hurt the other person, now there's two hurts. Two hurts don't make an unhurt.
Yeah, hurt people hurt people. And one might hypothesize or conceptualize this whole thing as generating from me being hurt from the very beginning. This whole thing was started by me
yeah.
being hurt and not aware of it.
Yeah.
And
that's
acting
true.
It out and being
that's true.
Being
so
a
I think
dick.
Every one of us needs to practice that self-awareness, feeling your body, yeah. feeling what you're feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
And also building routines, Berto.
Yeah.
Like, the awareness is important, but like with my wife this last week, the only reason why she was able to tell me that I hurt, that I was a dick, she didn't say I was a dick, she said it was hurtful or something. The only reason why she told me last week is because for years now, I have been trying to cultivate
yeah.
that routine, that trust. Because there's a chance that she's never had that sort of relationship with anyone, because it's
yeah.
not common to have that kind of routine with anyone. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
You know, so it's something that each relationship deserves to have as just a normal impulse that you, and you know the landscape, you know, like, with my wife, we've done it so many times that she trusts more and more and more that she can even feel the feelings. She can tell me and she can predict what I'm going to say, you
yeah.
know, and then I can predict that if I apologize in a certain way that she will accept it and forgive me. And the only way you can have that trust is because you do it so many fucking times.
Right.
And it's a leap. But when it feels weird in the beginning and awkward, but then eventually it just feels like asking someone to pass the salt, you know?
That's right. To pass the duce on the left-hand side.
Because it is just that. It's such a routine of life to feel hurt and to hurt.
True.
And as if you just say, hey, you hurt my feelings. Oh my God, I'm sorry. You know, I was being a dick. Yeah, you're right. I think I was being a dick because you kind of hurt my feelings earlier. I'm just sensitive about that. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I should tone that down. Okay. And then you, and then everything's good. And
yeah.
if you do it when you're a 2 or a 3, you don't have to wait till you're an 8 for 5
right,
weeks.
Right,
right. You know.
I will say, just last thought is, especially when it's stuff that is, because I think part of the reason I get militant sometimes is because there are something, I believe that there are some things in life that are worth dying on a hill for.
Yeah.
But those are few and far between. And if you apply that die on a hill to everything, then you're dying a lot and you're killing other people.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, anyone who listens to the podcast, and of course, you know, Berto, that I have my die on a hill things.
Yeah.
And I think that even if someone disagreed with me, which most people do, that's right. why I'm ranting. If I, don't, I only rant about shit that I perceive a lot of people disagreeing with me right. about. So if I don't need any, you know, I'd like it if people were convinced, but it, I don't depend exactly. on that.
It's like, you know, when in 2020 I cut off two people off of Facebook because I got to a point where I was like, okay, this is a hill I'm dying on with these two people. I'm not. I'm no longer going to have these conversations with them. Hmm. And I don't look back and regret that. It's sad. It's a little, it's not that sad, but it's a little sad that at some point in the past, I had relationships to some extent with these people. But it was a hill that I said, I can no longer have conversations that make any realistic sense with these people.
Well, arguably, it's activism in a minor sense yeah. to not enable
yeah.
destructive viewpoints and behavior yeah. that you, because I'm guessing that's what you're talking about.
Yeah,
right?
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was these posts on Facebook where I would try to change minds, and it became like a black hole.
Yeah.
And everything I said just led to them posting more misinformation. So I was finally like, okay, I guess this is a hill I die. But the way to die on the hill wasn't I will argue till I die. It was actually, okay, I am going to cut this
relationship. Yeah, and that's off. A much different behavior and right. act. It's not I'm going to hurt you.
Right.
It's I'm going to draw a boundary, and maybe myself. It'll hurt you, but I'm, you know.
Which, to my ex, I hate to say ex-friends, but to that friend's credit, he drew a boundary instead of then hurting me worse. Mm-hmm. Meaning, he said some things, but not, again, he wasn't malicious. It somehow triggered.
I don't know that. We could.
It could be. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
But to some of their credit, they finally did draw a boundary and remove themselves, which it could have gone the other way. They could have also tried to, like, kept going and said some even worse than whatever, right? I feel like that's someone that I actually do want to, I don't know if I'll be able to, but somehow reach out. I don't know if I'll find them, but reach out and say, hey, I want to apologize because I'm sure I hurt you. And here's the explanation where I'm, things I've learned and blah, blah, blah. Mm. I don't remember our conversation very well, but I'm sure that this was what was happening for me.
Yeah.
And blah, blah. And because he deserves it. And I deserve it.
And you deserve it. Yeah. You know, if you want to be selfish about it, which is fine, partially, like for me, I learned this the hard way, and I guess in a good way, that by being humble and by apologizing, one, it just feels good.
Yeah.
But two, it also locks in this, I don't know if it's shame or guilt or awareness, but when you're, you know, say you go to this friend and you have this conversation and say that, you know, it's a little difficult, and eventually he's like, well, thanks. And yeah. And that wasn't the only time you've done that to me. You know,
yeah.
I wouldn't have said goodbye if that was the first time. It was a number of times.
Right.
And it was really bothersome, hurtful. And when you're faced with that, you have to right. wrestle with the shame or the guilt or the concern, right? It's right in front of your face. It's not just this intellectual thought you have. It's not all fun and games. Now you're actually dealing with the consequences
right
there in front of you, and it kind of locks it into your head, and so it becomes this bigger part of your memory structure, such that the next time you're starting to engage in red flags, like those kind of memories will either be a felt sense or literally will come back to you and will give you motivation in the moment to be like, pump the brakes, because I don't want to, one, hurt someone, and I definitely don't want to be standing in front of them while I feel like shit because I made some terrible mistakes. You know?
Well, like you're saying about being somewhat selfish and self-preservation, it also only goes so far, meaning I want to apologize. I want to genuinely apologize because clearly I, in that case, probably others, whatever, I had, because I didn't recognize I was hurt, I hurt, right? Okay. At the same time, there's a possibility that this person has kept going down a path that we will now never agree on a lot of things. And
I would say there's a 70% chance.
And it's okay if that's where it's left.
Yeah.
Where it's, I apologized, we healed a little wound, and that's it.
Yeah, maybe even if you did make up,
right?
There's no chance of friendship given the political divide. Right.
But at least we leave it with a bit of, like a genuine apology that I wish I would have given at the time. And that I wish it wouldn't have gotten that far. It doesn't mean you have to agree with everyone. It doesn't mean you have to be friends with everyone. It doesn't mean, you know.
It might really lock it in to apologize to a Trump supporter.
That's right.
Like that'll
yeah.
be a particular
right.
poignant humility, you right. know. But yeah, well, you know, if you want to check in on this in the future, you know, we can, but maybe we can just not make George Lucas mistake and make prequels. We can just say, look, we have the trilogy.
Yeah. And I love it.
We're not going to go back and digitally remaster them. We're not going to add.
Well, I don't know. If you give me the AI keys,
we're not going to add Jabba the Hutt right. to Han Solo in Episode 4. We're just going to let the masterpieces
right.
lie and not mess it up.
Yeah.
And that does it for that episode of Psychology in Seattle. Everyone out there, please take care of yourself because
you deserve it.
And love you.
I love you. Love you, man.